Hello and welcome to the Persephone program. And today I have a very special treat. I have Carrie Basha, otherwise known as Boho Mofo, our favorite witch down under and Aquarian queen. And today we're going to talk about what's going on. We're going to talk about the point of equinox and the northern and southern hemispheres, and that initiatory point or threshold that we are all in. We're going to talk a bit about Aquaria and Aquarian things and Pluto and Aquarius and much more. We're going to talk about the call to action of the initiatory Aries point. We're going to talk about the call that many of us have been having from the Empyrean realms of the goddesses and sometimes gods, but it's mostly been goddesses. And we're going to catch up with Carrie because it's been a couple years. Hi, Carrie.
It has been a while. Hi. How is everybody doing? Thanks for having me. I love these chats of ours. I feel like we could just chat for hours, really, if time would allow.
Which we were. And yes. I was like, okay, stop.
Totally.
Carrie was saying so many cool stuff. I was like, stop. We have to share that. We were looking at her chart. We were talking about change, the kind of change that Saturn and Pluto create for us. We were talking a little bit about her life and her coven. Can you share a little bit, Carrie, about what you're working on and what's arising for you guys in Australia? And just remind listeners like what's going on for you, for all the witches that you are connected with.
Mm. Yes, I would love to. It's really interesting. We were talking just briefly then about how much things are changing, how much our work is changing, how we communicate with people is changing. And so I have found myself, particularly over the last 6 months, since my trip to the UK in October, November, I came back with a head full of steam of all these things I was going to do. And one by one, they've kind of been either shelved or slated somehow. And I am in this constant process at the moment of being redirected. And I was talking about this on my channel as part of my Patreon. I have a channel where I do a video sort of chat or reading or whatever, something once a week for everybody. And then that's also included in Coven membership if you join my Coven Electric, which has been going since 2019 there. And one of the things that happens with redirection is it just looks like the slate is being wiped. Like it can just feel like so many things are being stopped or halted or killed or removed or taken from your life. And, you know, it can feel pretty hairy and pretty scary sometimes, but maybe it's just that I am, you know, a shadow dancer and a shadow worker. My shadow program's been going for 7 years now from the days when I had to explain what it actually was to people. And obviously, you know, Pluto's just moved into Aquarius and that's my realm. But I don't panic the way that I used to anymore. When things used to be wiped or stopped, or you know, when things would break down or die, I used to, oh my God, did I used to scramble? It used to panic me so much. And I don't know if it's just that we're all, you know, scramble match fit after the past 3 or 4 years, but and I think it's also too probably the point that I'm at in my life. I've just turned 50. And so I'm right in the middle of that, you know, that midlife cauldron, and quite frankly, loving it too. But I just know now that something's giving way. It's the same way that I view the dark moon with the rituals that we do, you know, threading us through the wheel of the year. It's the same way that I view the dark moon. It's the ability to just kind of drop everything that isn't serving or that isn't where you're heading towards. And, you know, we can't always see where that is. We're incredibly myopic. And I say that as a tarot reader, but we can't always see where we're going because we're so connected to our present and we're so informed by our past. So for me now, I kind of, I try not to panic, and I sort of delight in the redirection because it, you know, it appeals to my nature at its core, this idea that I'm going somewhere and I don't really know where I'm going to, and I'm pretty sure it's going to be, you know, the next level or the next stage for me, whatever that is. But ooh. Yeah, God, it's epic at the moment. It's epic. It's happening on so many fronts.
I just have to tell you really briefly that I've been like, signs, symbols and synchronicities are coming fast and furious right now.
Oh, 100%.
The last few days have been off the hook with dreams and also all kinds of stuff with clients. But today, right before I spoke to you, I've been drinking tea all day because, as you know, I'm having these horrible allergies, spring allergies. Yep. So my little yogi tea said today, and I wanted to bring this up because this is so in keeping, like you're talking about, you know, walking through the your own underworld, or the idea that we can't see the future, right? So this says, the unknown is where all outcomes are possible. Enter it with
grace. Oh, I love that. I love that. It's so true. We've just, you know, we've got such a cultivated fear of the unknown. And I think so much of that is, you know, a pretty clunky control mechanism, like a social control mechanism that says, no, 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 stick with the devil you know, because the unknown could be so much worse than this. It's like this pessimistic subtext that sits underneath it. But yeah, it's the realm of everything's possible. It always makes me think of that, you know, that idea of it's one of the Bronte sisters, dwell in possibility. All possibility is available to you in the unknown, in that chaotic, not too sure.
Well, you know, your astrology. And of course that, you know, that may be a control, that may be, you know, our constant looking at the astrology may be a control mechanism of just saying like, hey, there seems to be some affinity here. Therefore,
control. I see it as an anchor. I really see it as an anchor for me. I mean, like an anchor in the stars, that's an anchor into the heavens, but I see it as an anchor.
It's a gift.
A language, a way of perceiving this reality that just happens to make a ton of sense for me and a ton of sense for you and the millions of people that subscribe to astrology and the hundreds and thousands of generations before us that did too. I mean, it's not random.
Well, no, I mean, absolutely not. And I think the idea that there's some form of intelligence and intent involved, life has meaning, okay? Because without it, you know, there is this massive feeling of like chaos and falling and that, but that element is part of the mystery. And I think that it's about balancing that sort of triad, you know, of the inner and the outer manifestations of life, of trying to keep a form of balance between the mind, body, and spirit. You know, we have all of these things, and this is one tool to help guide us through the darkness of our own ignorance or whatever it may be, you know, not knowing everything, but we do.
And also too, as human beings, we are pattern makers. We are storytellers. Our consciousness means that we do craft meaning from all of the things that happen in our lives. It's part of our makeup, and it's what distinguishes us from a whole bunch of other species that we share this planet with. So I think, you know, there's always that idea of, you know, are you reading too much into it? Are you this, are you that? But I think as well, just in the time that I've been writing about astrology, I think there is this really lovely opening up. It's becoming less formulaic and more about your relationship to, you know, the shadow and the light that goes with any aspect, any planet, any place, anything, rather than this sort of malefic benefic idea. I think that sort of, you know, perhaps that binary shows where astrology has come from, but I don't think that's where astrology is going to. So
I agree with you. I think that could be like a whole other topic.
Absolutely.
Because I agree with you. You know, I mean, I am a humanist, you know, astrologer, an evolutionary astrologer, although yes. I never had to call myself that before, you know, 15 years ago, when suddenly everything is like, I'm a traditional astrologer and, you know, and I'm a bell. But the idea here is that, yes, is that there seems to be, you know, meaning and intelligence and intent in all of the journeys that we go on in consciousness, you know, in our lives. And, you know, your journey, to tie it back to astrology, and we're talking about the cauldron of rebirth and Pluto in Aquarius and Saturn moving into Pisces, you know, is that Saturn is, you know, right now conjunct your midheaven. It is in your 10th house. It's going to be there for the next 2.5, you know, almost 3 years. And Pluto has just moved into Aquarius and just, you know, I don't think you mind if I tell them that you have you have a 29 degree Aquarius midheaven, and you're feeling it. You're experiencing it on a myriad levels, you know, this
absolutely
cauldron of rebirth. And you're also your Chiron return.
Mm-hmm. You
know? And that's awesome. Welcome to that, because I'm very glad I turned 56.
Second Saturn return.
Yes. I have Saturn in Pisces. I do.
Wow.
Yeah.
Excellent.
It's later degree. So, you know,
it's a bit to go, but.
And my progressed sun is in Pisces too. So I get to be, it's like 3 degrees, I think, this year. So I've been in a progressed sun in Pisces for a few years. So yeah, I'm really feeling that Piscean, you know, call. But regardless, we are all in such a key, momentous time. And so much of it I feel has to do with the age of Aquarius, you know, and the idea that it's been a long birth. It ties into, you know, some astrologers say that, you know, the age of Aquarius began in 1962, when we had a lineup of planets from Sun to Saturn, all in Aquarius. And in many ways that makes a lot of sense. There's this like connection to 50, you know, 60, you know, years ago. And it's connecting a lot with ideals and the idea that, you know, Aquarius represents the future and futuristic ideals, amongst many other things, you know, and energy. And there's a level of potential here in this chaotic time where we're kind of perhaps maybe ripping apart elements of society, you know, worldwide.
Absolutely. And I think also too, that it makes sense to me. I'm also really fascinated with the idea of when the inception point is. I'm a big fan of, you know, historic astrology, looking at patterns, looking at
the wide threshold. Maybe the threshold's like this big, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
But like, it's not going to start till 2144. And,
you know. Exactly. I think as well, and I mean, this is something that I talk about a bit in the coven, is that I think there's a bit of a conflict sometimes in astrology, because on the one hand, if you look at it from just that mathematical perspective, there's this, you know, exact lines and aspects and that sort of thing. But I always think that there is brackish water around that. So the same way that we move into the seasons, I mean, you know, the calendar says the 1st of March is the change of season, but it's from the equinox that you feel it, sort of thing, 3 weeks later. And I really think when it comes to astrology, and particularly big eras and big, you know, there's always crossovers. I mean, we're about to see it with the eclipses. We're going to get this, you know, random little Aries eclipse, even though we're still kind of finishing up the Taurus Scorpio axis. So I think when we are then talking about massive epochs, like, you know, moving from Pisces to Aquarius, and this, you know, Aquarian era, I think it has been creeping and sending up flares and showing signs of itself for quite some time. I mean, there's a bunch of us who are talking about it now, who were born, you know, 40, 50, 60 years ago, that are the people who are going to be really voicing these energies as well. So I think there is always those bits and pieces. But I think at the moment we're, you know, we are really at that cusp, the cusp that I call home in the zodiac, which is that Aquarius Pisces cusp, that place where there is a, you know, there is a mingling of energies that happens there. And that's the place that I think we find ourselves in right now. So that old Pisces age now is threatening to drown us. It really is. As we're moving away from this old world, it is trying to grab us and pull us under in its little whirlpools. Yeah, versus the idea of that fresh air of getting your head above water. Like I see the stars in a really mythological way, which of course, you know, I think you were the person who really identified that for me one morning, the beautiful little Instagram messaging exchange between us where you really helped me put all those pieces together about my Mercury in Pisces and what that actually means for my worldview and my writing and that sort of thing. And I do see everything through that, you know, mythopoetic lens. I've kind of always have, you know, it was dismissed as off with the fairies a lot when I was a kid.
Or a lot.
But seeing things that way. So I tend to draw, I don't know, I think I just see the world in metaphor, actually. And I tend to draw it that way. I write that way. I speak that way. It's who and how I am. So I just think at the moment we're at these almost kind of like these bizarre falls, because I love the idea of the Pisces falls at the end of the zodiac and then you land in Aries, that, you know, that sort of threshold that we've just crossed at equinox. But I also think when we're talking about moving from Pisces into Aquarius, it's a different kind of falls, and it's kind of a falls that you have to go over in order to fly, in order to get your wings, to get up into the air, into that, you know, that fresh air, which is what that Aquarian era is promising us right now. These ideas of different ways of living, different ways of existing as human beings. And yeah, we're in some incredibly strange territory that I'm sure for a lot of people as well, because let's face it, people aren't all that comfortable with Aquarius. I can tell you. They're really not always
Pisces,
very
certainly not right? Pisces either.
But challenging.
I want to just really briefly, this is kind of a good segue. I completely, in affinity with all that you say. I want to just read something that you wrote today. Or maybe it was yesterday. I don't know.
Yeah, it was yesterday. Well, it's the next morning for me.
It's the next morning. Exactly.
It was yesterday that I wrote it.
I mean, we're talking to Australia here. That perfectly encapsulates, you know, part of your gift. And I think that it's really important. And that is, we can cultivate hope in the face of its shadow and fish fresh determination from the swamp. We can fix our hearts on a point and let mighty forces draw us towards it. We are each still here to somehow save our world. Listen to the voice within that sings how to into your bones. Oh my God. I mean, that's part of also what I wanted to talk to you a little bit about today, because we were going to talk about the equinox and about thresholds and about what's happening in your world and mine, and about astrology. But something else just happened fairly recently. And that is that I have had my own private, I'll call it theurgistic relationship with certain of the ancient gods and goddesses, especially goddesses. You know, I'm a devotee of Hecate. And I have found that they are so I have never in my entire life ever, you know, of watching and listening and being a part of it, have I seen them rise up like they are. Like there's some kind of we know there's civil unrest. We know there's all kinds of problems in our modern world. We know, you know, as the watchers that we are, as the weird sisters, as you know, that we are sitting there trying to help in whatever way we can, you know, at the edge of our woods, you know, sharing whatever we can, you know, but, there's something happening that is not just in this realm, and it's really powerful. And that is that there is help, and there's help from the unseen worlds. And one of the ways mm-hmm. of these ancient goddesses are coming up and out in a very real way. They're coming to my clients through dreams, signs, symbols,
entities.
And I wanted to ask you about that. And it's especially Hecate, also Morrigan. Wow. I mean, a lot of it, you know, both very much associated with the triple goddess element, you know, both are triple goddesses, but especially those two, you know, which are very much about empowerment. And I wanted to ask you, mm-hmm. you know, when people are asking what to do, you know, part of what we need to do is that if you do feel called, you need a way in to be able to listen and heed that call. Tell me what's happening yeah. with you and your coven and your work that you're doing.
Well, we're about to start, I'm calling it a Mother Spirit devotional. And it's because I think one of the reasons that the goddess in her many guises is appearing at the moment, or is, I don't know, somehow seems closer or more accessible somehow yeah. in easier reach. I believe it's got to do a lot with the vibrational changes that are actually happening on planet Earth at the moment. So we can, you know, we can consider this in an esoteric way, but I also think we can see it in the Schumann resonance and it's spiking. We can see it in the incredible auroras that we're getting at the poles at the moment. I mean, the auroras that we're going through February and March, they have, I mean, you know, sometimes with the Aurora Australis, which is the one at the bottom of the world, gets a little bit less press, but not lately. And generally you can see that, you know, from Antarctica, but you can sometimes see it from Tasmania, the island at the bottom of Australia. But this time around, you could see it all the way up into New South Wales, which is a huge distance. Like that's thousands of kilometres. Australia is a giant landmass. So there's, you know, the skies are dancing, and we have to remember that these the light show that we see is as a result of solar flares, is as a result of these intense mass coronal ejections that come from the sun and come belting towards, you know, the Earth and are captured at the poles, at the sort of magnetic point. So we're really talking about energy and vibration here. We know that human beings are sensitive to this kind of vibration arriving, and I just don't think it's by accident. You know, the Earth is spiking its energy field and ours are spiking as well. And I think what's happening is that there is this elevation of consciousness and an elevation of our vibration. I don't think it's a competitive thing. I'm so against all of those ideas about who's woken up and who hasn't woken up. Like, let's just, you know, perhaps not consider it, you know, along the conditioned lines we have about thought and who's woken up to some ideas and who hasn't, because, you know, we see each younger generation as it comes through completely reinvent the wheel and rediscover, you know, ancient concepts that have been there since the beginning of time. But each generation has a different approach to it. And I think that what we're seeing now is this incredible rise in energy and vibration. It's what is going to be required in all of us who are still here to save our world. And to save our world from perhaps from the Piscean age and everything that happened there, ruthless, you know, consumption and commodification of things that should never have been treated that way, including people and the earth. And so I think with the raising vibration, we have, it's almost like an easier connection. It's kind of like a good signal, if you like, that allows us to be reached by these energies and then also to reach out to them ourselves. Mm-hmm. And I think the reason that we're sort of seeing this rise of goddess energy, and I think it's been going for quite some time, I think particularly in astrology, it was, you remember, I mean, how many years ago was it now? Where all of a sudden all the asteroids came into yeah. play massively in astrology, and all of them are, well, a lot of them are named after feminine goddesses sort mm-hmm. of thing. So it's sort of had this influx of energy back then. I think that the reason that we're seeing it now is because the feminine is the creatrix, is the mothering spirit, is that sort of that portion from which life emanates. And that's what we need to be birthing, and that's what we need to be moving towards at the moment, is this creation of new worlds and new life and new understanding. And that's got to come through that feminine principle. I think it gets very, very tangled in our binary ideas of masculine and feminine, of male and female, of patriarchy and feminism, and, you know, all these terms and all these labels. I think what's simpler to understand is that, you know, we are magnetic beings and we have two poles, a masculine and a feminine. Power lies in the polarity between the two. And if we want to look at that as a spectrum, all of us have got a sweet spot along it. But I don't think, you know, being a man, for example, means that you don't have such ready access to the goddess as being a woman, or anything in between. So I think we have to be really careful not to get it tangled in these constructs that we have built, and a lot of these constructs that have been incredibly self-serving for the power structures that did exist formerly, that are beautifully having their tower moment and crash into the ground as we speak. But there is this ability for us all to tap into this feminine energy that is all about creation. And what we need to do right now is create, you know, new ways of being in the world, new ways of accessing that. So the reason I wanted to do the Mother Goddess or the Mother Spirit devotional this year is to be able to, and it's just going to be, I mean, it's evolving as we go. I'm going to launch it on the next Sabbath, but it's really just designed to be a monthly get together, and there's going to be a lot of information in there, and it's designed to encourage people and to give them guidance to be able to form a personal relationship to that energy in whatever way, shape or form you want. So at the moment, all of us coven witches in my coven are all choosing our mother spirit goddess. We're choosing the one that we want to work with. And I'm really encouraging people not to work with the one that they know, but with the one that they don't know, that is kind of calling to them, that seems to be showing up everywhere for them at the moment. So tempting as it is for me to always go towards, you know, Kali, Sekhmet, Hecate, like, you know, Persephone, I always want to go towards those life, death, rebirth goddesses, and particularly the dark goddesses and the death goddesses. They are hands down my favorite. But instead, I'm going to be working with the goddess who's only just started showing herself to me. And I'm busy, you know, I'm not even really sure that I have her name quite yet. I kind of have her form and her shape. And yeah, it's the idea that we'll all be moving into relationship, because that's what I think is the most important thing, is being able to form a relationship. And when it comes to spirituality and when it comes to divinity, we don't seem to treat it the same way that we treat forming a relationship with a person or a place or a thing, you know, where we visit initially and we're on our best behavior and we're, you know, trying to set some lovely foundations there. You know, when it comes to spirituality and divinity, we have this, again, terribly consumptive attitude where we kind of cry out to our god or goddess when something goes wrong, or we shake fist at sky, and then we don't devote ourselves the rest of the time. We don't keep showing up. We don't keep maintaining a relationship. We're like that shitty friend that only hammers down your door when something's going wrong and isn't there the rest of the time. Like, the relationship is deeply, deeply one-sided. I think a lot of that has probably grown out of some of those, particularly in the Western world, those, you know, Christian ideas or perhaps Catholic ideas that there are gates to God and that you have to go through a prescribed path and a prescribed person, and that's the only way that you can get there, sort of really belying the fact that all of us can have a personal relationship to divinity through our bodies, through ourselves, not through these institutions and these halls of, well, power and largely smoke and mirrors. So, you know, I think we're we're at a really lovely junction point where we're in a world now that is just so fed up with the bullshit and lies that come from the old power structures, one of which has always been religion and organized religion, and is, as I've said, and you know, it's informed so much of my working life in what I do now, that people are really hungry for spiritual connection. They're hungry for divinity. They just don't know how to get to it without having to join a club, hate another club while you're in that club, you know, go through a bunch of stuff that maybe doesn't fit in with their lifestyle or some of their other ideas. And you know, and there's all these labels attached to all of it, as opposed to the idea that I think that maybe, you know, all you need is a commitment to show up every day and, you know, a candle. Maybe it can be that simple.
Absolutely. And that's beautiful, all of that. And I agree with you. And I think that that's important, you know, that this divine energy of creation. Okay. That's what we can call it too. I mean, I don't mind calling it goddesses, all the, you know, I think that all the quote unquote gods, you know, including goddesses, are one aspect of the source, the universe. And there is within that source way more than duality. We experience duality on earth, this part of our dimension. But like for our listeners, the idea here is that you can experience spirituality or even your own astrology, you know, by having a personal relationship with it that includes not just, is it a commodity, like commodity, you know, making it a commodity or making it something that is like a food to fill you up, but that to understand that there's a relationship between you and this divine aspect of life that you can, you know, allow to be within you. You can, you know, allow it to be channeled through you. You can listen and ask what it wants to say to you. There is a relationship. That's what you do in a relationship. It's like you, you give and you take and you speak and you listen too. And I think that's the, I agree with you that if you are feeling the call, if that is something that you want to do right now at this pivotal time where we're standing on this like super, super long threshold. Okay. And we see behind us, you know, many things, you know, including the rolling ocean once at once benign and terrible, you know, and the future ahead of us is murky, you know, we don't know. It looks like cloud. It looks like fog. And we're standing on this threshold, you know, and we're like, we can listen. We can call out to all of these energies, you know, including the energy of the earth itself, you know, a living being and you know, that is literally breathing, that has a heartbeat, you know.
Well, because imagine, say, with the goddess devotional, I mean, one of the people in the coven has chosen Gaia as the goddess. So and I mean, that's the great thing, is that it's such a cross section, and it's not a hierarchical space. So it's this idea of us all, you know, not coming from a place of knowing, which I think is one of the great faults in our humanity at the moment, is that we think we know everything, as opposed to, I don't know, maybe it's just that the older you get, the more you realize how little you know.
But that does happen. That's one of the benefits of wisdom.
Absolutely. But I think the other thing too is that having crossed this, you know, this massive initiatory threshold and this place that we're in now, you know, the new Pluto era, all of that Aries equinox energy, the zero point initiation spark that happened again. I think the thing that we so easily forget, and maybe because there aren't great initiatory rites that exist in the Western world that aren't connected to alcohol or age, but that are actually connected to the getting of wisdom and the orienting yourself towards becoming an elder at some point, if you're lucky enough to get there, is that when you are the initiate, you don't know anything. That's why you're an initiate. You are not an adept. You have not yet had the experiences that are going to foster understanding and teach you things. You have to walk through the fire still. The other thing that I think we miss in the Western world about initiation, if you look towards Indigenous cultures and if you look towards other tales and stories, is that, you know, initiation is not an online course. Initiation is usually terrifying.
Yes.
It's got a huge aspect of pain and fear and panic. Absolutely. To it. You feel like you're going to die. And yes, to some degree, parts of you do die in order to give way to the new parts that are being reborn. So whilst everybody's really happy to kind of bandy around this idea of initiation, the place that we are at in the world right now stinks of initiation because it is terrifying and it Absolutely. Is, you know, it is a life and death axis. And in fact, we've been teetering on that, well, since way before 2020, but 2020 was the year that made it real again.
Agreed.
Thank you, Saturn and Pluto. And so
hey, that's what they do.
That's totally what they do.
That's what they do.
And so this is the point that we find ourselves at. And we have been so, you know, so softened and so coddled by a modern world where everything is convenient and in easy reach and able to be controlled, or so we thought. Turns out, not the case at all, complete delusion. And now, as that curtain has been ripped all the way back, we are in this stage of really, really deep initiation. So, yes, everything looks black. The ground is shaking. We're not quite sure where we're going next. We don't know if we've got the tools or the resources to be able to get there. That's the hallmark of initiation. And it's a collective one, but it's also an individual one as well, as we all take our distinct paths through this process and learn this way. So, yeah, this is the threshold that we're at. And personally, I happen to love it.
We just took it. The crooked pathway to the crux of all of this, which is that we are at an initiatory process. We are in an initiatory process as a species, as a global culture, as humans on Earth. And this initiatory process is being reflected by the threshold of the age of Aquarius, or the which is the precession of the ages, that we are moving, you know, into and through, that we are getting our signs, symbols, and synchronicities from all around us, that, you know, change is nigh. And the fact that we wanted to talk about the equinox point, that initiatory point where, and I wanted to, bring up the Sabian symbol, and I love them so much. You know, I'm not so familiar with the Chandra symbols, but I love the Sabian symbols and their whole history, you know, of being these intuited by Elsie Wheeler, these intuited degrees of the zodiac, and each one has this visual image, and the visual image for that 0 degrees Aries is the mermaid, or the woman rising up out of the sea. And the whole idea of rising up, or the age of Aquarius, you know, from the age of Pisces, and that fresh air type thing, that fresh energy of rising, the divine feminine as maybe being a creatrix, a creator, a cauldron of regeneration, a creatrix.
Yeah.
I had a dream. We had a Gemini new moon solar eclipse. I think it was 2018. It might've been 2019. I think it was 2019. And I remember in the dream, it was so freaking vivid. And it was like, I heard a voice in my head in this dream. And I was kind of like standing in darkness. I like woke up and I was in darkness in a black expanse. And it was like, there was a point of light and a voice said, more creation, less destruction. And it kept repeating, more creation, less destruction. Like it was on repeat, like it was from outer space. And that was my understanding of my dream, was like, this is like a message from And I felt it was from the constellation. I felt it was from the star Aldebaran and from that constellation.
Which yeah, message from
actually
the
in Gemini. That was my whole understanding when I woke up. But that's the piece, more creation, less destruction. And that ties into the goddess work that you're doing for all of us. This is nothing, male, female, doesn't matter.
No.
It doesn't matter. We each have within us this opportunity to birth a new age, a new life for ourselves that does require us being or going through this initiation. This initiation of you know, all that is of pain, fear, facing the dweller on the threshold. You know, that the demon, the plague. Mm. You know, the earth is dying, you know, nuclear, all of the violence, all of the our mortality lays in front of us, but we each have a choice. And each person can, if they work with this energy individually and with sacredness, like you said, light a candle and
Make it holy,
make it sacred.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, this isn't a meme. This isn't a freaking cute little video. It can be, but I mean, it's like, I take it seriously. This is serious.
Yeah.
This is an initiation.
Well, I mean, spirituality is serious. It seems to be only the witchy astrology end that becomes the butt of all jokes. I mean, try and make a joke about spirituality to a devout Catholic. Try and make a joke about spirituality to a devout. I mean, insert any religion here, because in all of them, there are, you know, the kind of fundamentalist ends of them. But I think, you know, we're starving for connection, but we're trying to grab at it through attention. And I think that's particularly reflected in social media, which is, you know, quite frankly, feeling like it's going to disappear up its own asshole sometime soon.
Pluto and Aquarius is saying that to me loud.
But I just think, you know, there are so many paths to this destination, and there are so many names for the destination itself. So what I'm always trying to foster in my work is it's ways of means of connecting to that. I mean, obviously I love, you know, my favorite way to connect to it is through stories, and that's why I write the little fairy tales that I do. I think another way to connect to it is and probably the way that is most common for human beings, well, probably as common as story, is ritual. Is to actually ritualize things. You know, ritual is a container. We have a tendency to think of ritual according to what our relationship or our understanding of the word has been. But if we think of ritual as a container, then it puts a sacred boundary around a practice, around a devotion, you know, and our life is strung together like beads on a chandelier by these rituals that we have. I mean, you know, talk to any football player. They've got a bunch of rituals before they play. We have birthday rituals. We have New Year's rituals. I think of all of this as very common magic that we have all the way through our lives. So I think if you really want something for your life, or if you want to foster something in your life, the best thing that you can do is ritualize it, is make a ritual out of it, whether that's a ritual in your garden, whether that's a morning practice, whether that's, you know, and I think when you ritualize things, it's not just the muscle memory and the sense memory that moves you into the particular state that you're looking for, but I think also too, it, you know, it's like it draws a little golden line around it. And when you get to step into that, it radiates. And that, I think, is absolutely magic. So the more that we can build these rituals into our lives, and I mean, most people will say they have a morning routine. What if you flip that idea into a morning ritual? You make it a ritual, it somehow imbues it with this sacredness, with this sort of holiness. And so why can't we do that? I'm a big fan of that. I call it, you know, everyday magic, being able to weave magic into the mundane aspects of your life, the things that you have to do every day anyway, whether it's, you know, having a shower or making a coffee or, you know, whatever it is. They're things and practices that we do every day, and we've just gotten so mindless about them, but we can make them really mindful, and then we can elevate them even more into right. something that is, you know, that can be deeply spiritual for us. You know, I don't think we have to dress up in our finest suit and go to a particular building on a particular day of the week to listen to a particular, usually man, bang on about how we're supposed to feel about something. I think instead we can, and in fact have always been able to, craft these for ourselves with wherever we are and whatever we have. It shouldn't cost money, and it shouldn't have all these gates and blocks to being able to find it when it lives within you. That's what you want to cultivate. And I think the way that we can do that is through ritual. I also think ritual is kind of the only thing that holds you through initiation.
Yeah,
and that's why initiation is always framed in massive, massive amounts of very formalized rituals, because it's the only thing that provides safety in that container, or in that cauldron, really, because it is a cauldron.
So here we are in this threshold, this cauldron of regeneration, standing on the threshold. It's an initiatory time. We know that. Mm. And so, you know, what you're bringing forth and what we're talking about here is also grounding ourselves in ritual, sacred ritual, and listening. That's a big part because, you know, typically through initiations that require the pain and the fear and the awareness,
massive discomfort,
they also require a vision and or an experience from typically from a form of supernatural power. That supernatural power is available to all of us. You know, you do not have to starve yourself into a different state of, you know, of consciousness. You do not have to use drugs. And it's best perhaps if you don't. All you could do is, like what you just mentioned, is create a sacred space for yourself, whatever that may be. It may be that you have your coffee or your tea, you say a blessing into it, you stand in light, you imagine light coming into your body, you address the sun, or you address the earth, or you put your hands on the earth and you bless it, you bless the fork, the sacred, you know, directions. It's creating this sacred space. Maybe every night you light a candle and you say a prayer for the safety of yourself, all that live, your family. And then you sit and you listen.
Yeah.
And that's how you can begin to create that. And then, as you said, you can elevate that and you can make magic happen for yourself. And that magic is empowerment. And that empowerment will help each one of us get through this very scary time.
Yeah, this weekend I'm doing an online intuition workshop, and it's work that I used to teach quite some years ago. Like, I kind of had such a disrupt with pandemic and lockdown and all that sort of thing, and it really shifted for a while there the way that I worked, and I was really working exclusively online. So I haven't taught this online before. But the reason I think it is so important at the moment to be tuned into our intuition and ultimately to our soul's voice inside of us is that listening piece that you were just talking about. So many people are so used to just all this constant shit talking in their head at the moment, whether it's other people's ideas, whether it's their ideas about themselves. And if you think of that in the context of what we were just talking about, it's like casting the shittiest spell there is over yourself constantly and over your life constantly. And when that chatter, and it's got so many names, it's the inner critic, it's got a thousand different names,
the death mother,
like whatever you want to whatever you want to call that, like just shit talking in your head, when that is very, very loud, it's really, really hard to hear that quieter voice of your soul and your intuition inside of you. So it was quite a few years ago, actually, I had somebody contact me and say, oh, do you teach intuition? And at the time I was like, well, yeah, sure, I can put something together for you. And it ended up being what how my shadow program came to be a few years later after teaching intuition, because I started realizing that, you know, I mean, my belief around intuition is that it's, you know, and even psychic and divine ability is that it's not a gift. It's like a muscle, a sort of a spiritual muscle, and you've just got to know how to exercise it and how to connect it and how to use it. So I realized that the way that I was teaching intuition was actually shadow work, because a lot of my thinking and my ideas around it are like, well, let's not focus on grasping and trying to find it because it already lives in you. Let's focus on all of the things that you block it with. Let's have a look at its shadows. And I think we live in a world that that doesn't revere intuition as much as it reveres logic, as much as it reveres proof. You know, we know, thanks to the invention of the internet, that you can find anything to prove your point of view. But it's not really about that. You know, intuition is all about listening. It's all about trust. It's all about understanding. And those are things that we sort of talk about in these nebulous concepts, but sometimes they can be very sort of slippery to connect to within ourselves. So, you know, it does feel, again, like part of this big redirection that has been happening for me over the last 6 months because Aquarius and everything that's been happening there. And it does feel to me that what has become more important now is that we move away from this kind of guru font of all knowledge idea, and we get much better at being able to follow our internal guru, being able to follow our soul's path and our calling, because that's why we're here right now. So it has shifted the work that I do and the way that I offer it, because I've always been really passionate about being able to tell people's stories back to them. Because when you hear your story from somebody else's mouth who really doesn't know you, it lands in you a completely different way. And that's what I think the divinatory arts are great for, tarot and cards and things like that. But I think sometimes our intuition, you know, struggles to get through what we think is just our own voice constantly talking to us, when sometimes it's not that. So what I'm really trying to orient around at the moment is helping all of us to be able to connect more deeply to our own guidance, to be able to have enough quiet in our life to be able to hear it, to be able to listen to it, and then crucially, really crucially, to act on it. Because everybody has got a story about their intuition, but a lot of those stories are framed in hindsight. You know, I didn't do it. And then later this person called me and blah, blah, blah. And they go, oh, and they realize that actually they had the foresight, but they kind of couldn't grasp it, or they couldn't conceptualize it, or they couldn't hear it at that point. So, you know, because intuition is knowledge without reason. That's the definition of it. And we live in a world that says, unless you give me 25 really good rock solid reasons, no. So, you know, where does that leave us when we're trying to follow our soul's path?
If the age of Aquarius and Pluto and Aquarius and all of that is a lot about understanding the divinity of each, inclusivity, right? Understanding we are all together one, but also individually we are special and unique. And that perhaps, you know, we're all cells in the great body, right? We each one of us.
I love that idea.
Yes, our points of light, you know, cells, aware cells in the body of all that is, that then therefore we are divine. We have this divine, and the divine grace is our free will. The divine grace is our ability to recognize our own creative potentiality that we are each birthing and co-creating. We do have some co-creative power here, no matter what. Mm. And that's part, I think, of the message of this time, and listening, you know, to our own unique way of connecting and our own personal spiritual path. It doesn't hit there, you know, somebody's everybody's sort of like saying, you know, that there is a way, a truth, you know, a path.
One true God.
it's outside of myself and it involves me, you know, listening and obeying, you know, and you know, sacrificing myself. No, you know, this is what this time is about. That's very part of that age of Pisces, that passive, you know, crucifixion of our will. But
I think also too, it's interesting how these things have come to mean something other than perhaps what they are. So I'm really fascinated with the idea of sacrifice, because sacrifice comes from the Latin word sacrere, that means to make sacred. Now, if you think of sacrifice in the context of motherhood, if you don't think of sacrifice in the context of violence, and you don't think of sacrifice in the context of martyrdom, but if you think of sacrifice in the context of motherhood, it's a willing sacrifice.
Yeah.
It's an absolutely willing sacrifice. And it's because you hold your child's life and their development sacred. It is sacred. So when we talk about sacrifice and think about sacrifice in this world, we always think of it as giving something up. Right. I have to lose something. It has to cost me something. That's what a sacrifice is. But actually, you know, the truer meaning of sacrifice is that you are willing to give that up because you hold something greater than yourself sacred.
Well, that's during initiation, right?
Yeah, well, it's a particularly naive idea.
You sacrifice your virginity, you know, personal, you know, taking personal responsibility, you know, for deciding that if you want life to be sacred, then you have to make it sacred. And that does require, let's turn that back into action, you know, willing action. I'm willing to do my part in helping birth this new life for myself in the world, you know, each one of us.
Yeah. And it's got to, and I think part of the, perhaps I hope part of this Aquarian epoch that we're now entering is that we move away from this, you know, win lose binary towards a greater good idea. So the individual wins when the collective wins as well, sort of thing. So it's more an idea of being able to be, you know, the tiny drop in the vast ocean that shifts and changes its individual makeup. And I think it's one of those really curly Aquarian ideals that, you know, is a little bit enigmatic and is a little bit annoying at the same time, because they're not always easily digestible and hard, and they're hard to understand, much like Aquarians. And so it's this notion that it's a both and rather than a either or, that we're sort of moving towards that, because ultimately we've got to dispense with this idea of collateral damage.
I fully agree with that. And, you know, it's just conceptually the ideal, you know, the Aquarian ideal is sometimes a little divorced from the, you know, ability to put it into practice, you know, the manifest reality, whatever that may be. I mean, we've had a lot of ideas in the last, you know, several hundred years, you know, with the idea of Western democracy, the idea of sharing via communism, you know, it seems like democratic socialism is actually working in small places in the world, you know, but we're in a new
time. The problem is always, you know, when, no matter what you call it and no matter what team you say you're batting for, the problem, the root of it all is power.
Yeah. I was going to say it's power. And the thing is, okay, so let's talk about the fact that for the most part, many, many folk are operating, let's just say, like peaceful, like a peaceful herd animal. Okay. Like a sheep. We'll use a sheep as an analogy.
Yeah.
We're like all together. We're eating our little grass. We're like hanging out. We're doing our things. We're birthing our children. But there are wolves around. There's always energetic forms, whether they are human or not, or inhuman. There are energetic forces around, of just as powerful, of destruction, of chaos that are bringing energies of wrath. And it, you know, and we have to remember that we each, like the herd does have power. You know, the herd has a power.
100%.
And even though these wolves may seem really strong, you know, ultimately the herd can protect themselves against the wolves.
I mean, well, and also too, that the wolves very frequently seem strong because of the wolf pack that they have snarling and snapping behind them. You know, part of what I was writing in that post yesterday, which was absolutely generated as a result of the shock and trauma of yesterday, is that we, you know, the point I was trying to make is that we know that one shithead on the internet can absolutely destroy our day.
Yeah.
We all know this to be true because we've all had it happen so many times. And yet we don't equate that with the power of people coming together in a collective. If that one troll can destroy your day, then if you look at the flip side of that, what can a committed huge group of citizens do to change their world? I mean, the people in power forget that they got there by riding that wave, that powerful wave of a whole bunch of people that come together. And because they're the person surfing on the top of that wave, they, you know, and it, I think it's part of human nature and what happens when human nature collides with power.
It's the ring of power. It's like it absolutely. And so 100%. Therefore, let's just say power in that hierarchical way isn't really a sustainable form of being for humans. And maybe that's something that we need to understand and realize, because just like power, it's going to corrupt everyone and it needs to be destroyed. You know?
Yeah. And I think that's what's kind of so interesting. And that's why I have always been fascinated with shadow work. And that's why I spend a lot of my time in the underworld and in the shadows, because that's where power roots in.
Yeah.
In the shadows, yes. In the underworld. And that's Pluto's domain. So I think, you know, you can't really play with power seriously unless you have really reckoned with shadows. And we see it constantly, like over and over and over again. We see these power structures or these people, you know, in power brought down by the shadow. But at the same time, I think we also see them, you know, continually usurped. And it always makes me come back to those beautiful words from Ursula Le Guin. And she made this incredible speech when she was accepting an award towards the end of her life from publishers about, you know, what an incredible writer she was, what a prolific body of work that she had. And she stood up there, this teeny tiny little bird-like woman, and just absolutely reamed the publishing industry. Like this tiny woman stood up there and just made this incredible speech. It's so worth going to find on YouTube. And one of the things that she said is, she said, we think that the power of capitalism is absolutely unassailable, but we used to think that about the divine right of kings. And we don't anymore. You know, that power structure has changed. I think when Queen Elizabeth died last year, empire died with her. Yeah, you know, that, and it was the end of that era of empire. It was, which is the old model of power that we are all still living under. I mean, you know, in various ways and means, there's different political structures now, but fundamentally it is still pulling from that era, which is that Piscean era. Now, that's gone, but we don't have something else in its place yet. And I don't even think we have the words or the names yet for the things that are going to emerge through, you know, through what's coming. I think it's too premature to name it yet.
I agree. And that's why, to tie back to the idea that I think that that the forces of, you could even, the forces for good, for creative rebirthing are available to us from many different dimensions. And so the key here is to begin to listen and don't let you know, social media pull you in. Don't let media pull you in. Like,
oh, fear, just
be
fear.
Quiet and be, create a sacred ritual around, you know, your whatever practice you put in play during this time, because then you'll will be able to hear and see, and probably, Carrie, it may happen. It's probably going to happen outside of our lifetime, because this is a long epoch. But we're standing here, and everybody that's listening to us too is tied in with this, of like, you and I are standing here too. It's like, we are here to help. We are here to help you listen, identify and listen to your own sacred calling, because the call is there. The call is there for us to collectively rebirth. And in order for us to do this, we have to go a little bit into the underworld, find, you know, shine the light of our own awareness on where we are scared and where we feel disempowered, and empower ourselves through that underworld journey up, you know?
And also too, stop running our calling through the lens of capitalism.
Yeah.
You know, how many people started to find their calling through the pandemic because they finally had enough time and space and room, and kind of, you know, the table had flipped and everything was up in the air. So they're like, well, hell, you know, I might as well just go and do this because I love doing it.
Yeah.
But instantly there's always this idea that things have to be commodified, they have to be monetized, they have to be built into an empire of their own. And I think, you know, that that idea that you're talking about, this idea of you know, helping and shepherding and, you know, supporting people to come into their calling, then we move towards a society where, you know, everybody's got their thing and it can all be traded, and it can all be, you know, it sort of fits together in a different way, rather than the world that we're living in now, where there are so many people living mindless or soulless lives. But for what? To be a cog in somebody else's wheels, to get these things that you're told you're supposed to have, like, you know, your house, which is now basically unaffordable, or, you know, your big pile of money at the end, or, you know, these sorts of things. And there are people who are just working their whole lives, but they're not living their life. And I think it's kind of that idea of the unrealized calling, the life unlived, I think is the greatest tragedy, just the thought of it. So and we've been really fed this idea as well, that unless what we do takes over the world, it's not successful by conventional standards, or it's not, you know, seen or heard or felt. But you know, what if your soul's calling and your life path is just to do that one thing, to make that one thing, to help that one person, to, you know, I think that's a much more approachable idea, because the way that our world works at the moment discourages people from finding their calling.
Yep.
People are educated out of it. They're indoctrinated out of it. They're constantly told it can't work or it won't succeed. And the people who are wildly successful in this world are the people who don't listen to that. And I think we've got a really incredible opportunity, each one of us now, to be able to get really deeply connected to that and then to run with it. Because I genuinely believe that if you are meeting the brief of your soul, rather than your mind or the world, that if you are meeting the brief of your soul, you'll have what you need to be able to do it.
100%.
Maybe we just let go of some of these ideas that, you know, what do we actually need versus what do we want?
Yeah, sort of it's thing. Soul work. It's soul work.
Yeah.
Everyone, if we can empower everyone to understand that everyone is uniquely important and sacred, and your life is sacred, but only you can grab that, right? You have to grab it through your own personal connection to your own soul and to the sacredness of all life, right? So each person is, but we need to know that we want to, I think both of our messages, like, empowering to humans, you know, to folks, to our brothers and sisters and all in between, and that, you know, that everything is sacred. Your life is sacred. and this is an important initiatory threshold. This is an important time for you to take that seriously. And if people are scared, I mean, anyone that's listening to this obviously is heeding some form of an alternative call, you know, of their soul and looking to find a way and a means, you know, to live their best life, to live a soulful life, to live a life of vitality and meaning and power. And, you know, it's individual, you know, it's personal.
Absolutely.
And that is part of the collective. Like, you take care of yourself, falling back into the Aries energy and the equinox point. It's like, the time is now. Now is the time. How do you do it? Begin by taking your own sacredness seriously. Begin with creating and carving out ritual. Begin with
listening. And I think also too, and collaboration as well.
Collaboration.
Rather than this idea of this sort of, I don't know whether it's the lone wolf or the solo pursuit. I just think, you know, because you and I have both had the great privilege of being the last generation that was an adult before the internet took over. Yeah. And you know, the rise of social media and the internet has meant that we are supposedly more connected, but I think we all feel more isolated and more alone. And that was probably never brought home more than during the pandemic. So one of those really Aquarian ideals is that idea of humanity as a collective. And so rather than this, you know, it's all just going to be me and it's going to be about me, or I'm just going to consume other people's ideas and make them mine, or I'm going to, you know, versus the notion of collaborating, of being in conversation with yourself, in conversation with other people, building things that, you know, that rely on other people as well, so that we move from that Piscean era of codependence to an interdependence.
Yes.
I don't think the opposite of codependence is independence. I think it's interdependence.
Healthy interdependence.
Absolutely. So we're building communities where, I mean, that's, I think, the thing that is most devastating for me about the direction that social media is going in at the moment, because I've spent so much time building communities, connecting to communities, finding people online and establishing relationships the same way that we did. You know, you're finding your others, you're finding your people from a much, much, much bigger pool. And now the algorithm is funneling into such a narrow frame that is ultimately built around, it seems like, online shopping and memes. But instead of this idea of fostering community, fostering connection, you know, when we really connect and converse with people who are wildly different from us, what we always end up drawing is the same conclusion, which is that we tend to come from the same place. We're human beings. We have the same needs and wishes and loves and desires, and they are the same no matter where we live, no matter what we call ourselves. But instead, we have these constantly confected ideals of separation and difference fed to us. And it's not the idea that you can't see distinction. It's not the idea that you can't see difference, because difference is crucial. That's what makes things interesting. But it's the idea that you can see the common thread as well that runs through us all. And I think that that's particularly this Aquarian era that we're looking to be interdependent, to see how we can all bring something to the table, how we can all nourish each other, and that we are working harder to connect rather than to control, because I think so much of those old era and old world ideas are power, you know, it's control dressed up as power, and it's really this idea that there is so much confected fear around things that are different. Rather than, I think what we should be confecting is curiosity. I mean, that's what it's always been for me. If I see something that's different or that's wildly out there, I'm galloping towards it because I want to know what it's all about. I'm fascinated by it. I'm not interested in more of the same. I'm interested in the things that are different. And I think, you know, we always find our new ideas and our new leaders, and they always come from out on the fringe. They don't come from the center.
Yeah.
They come from the edges. And one of the things Aquarius does really well is perch on those edges.
I was just thinking that you said the word no, and isn't that the Aquarius keyword? I know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I want to know, you know, I want to know and experience that, so many different things. But yeah, I mean, that's, you know, that's, I think, the piece of, I think, what is potential now with this time is the understanding that we are all, you know, important, that we are all, the astrologer Debbie Kempton Smith, who wrote this super funny book. If you don't have it, you should get it. Secrets from a Stargazer's Notebook in the 80s.
I love it.
She's when there's British. She wrote for like Elle magazine. She wrote like horoscopes.
Yeah.
I think she worked with Michael Luton too. She is so freaking funny and super rock and roll astrologer. And she wrote, there was something that she wrote about, and I think that she was saying like, okay, I think it might've been like a sun in the first house, but, and that ties in with our Aries initiatory point, but she said, all right, you're supposed to think you're Jesus Christ, but just remember everybody else is too.
You know? Oh, I love that idea.
I mean, that kind of like ties in to how I feel about that. What we're talking about or how I'm perceiving it. It's like, look, what you do and are and your way is important, but so is everyone else's. And if you want to know more about yourself, the world at large, it becomes collaborative, that we need to learn. Mm-hmm. And that's what Aquarius is very much about, is like healthy interdependence, inclusivity, the idea that.
But not losing yourself in it.
It's filled with unique points of light that all make up, like, you're as important as me, and I'm as important as she and he and they and everyone else. And we all have something to do in the beautiful, in the beautiful and sacred circle.
And I think also too, the other part of that that is amazing is that, you know, freak flag waving Aquarian individualism, which is what lets your individual light be seen as part of a constellation. You know, you still have to be elevating that. So I think one of the things that we will start to see happening more and more and more is that people are going to be trying less to be like other people, to follow a well-trodden path, to go the way that somebody's already gone, and you know, they just become the person at the top of the next click funnel, and you know, blah 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 blah, that's those sort of, you know, like, I mean, it's like people pyramid schemes almost, versus this notion that people are going to start grabbing their machete and carving their own paths. And, you know, from that, we're going to get innovation and we're going to get invention and we're going to get the solutions that we're so desperately striving for to solve the really big problems that we have in the world at the moment, socially, environmentally, politically, financially, economically, you know, in every other way. We need invention and we need innovation, and that's where I hold and place so much faith in the generation that's coming of age now, which, you know, just our kids and you know what they're and even teenagers, like what they're starting to be able to achieve, and the huge numbers of people that they are able to reach something that was, you know, almost impossible in the 90s or the 80s, for example, unless you were in a stratospheric level of fame sort of thing. So it's, I personally, I know that there is a lot of darkness and that these are very dark times at the moment, but I have an enormous amount of hope, an enormous amount of faith, and a really genuinely deep belief in the younger generations, the Gen Zs, and even the kids that are being born now, who are coming into such a completely different world and are crafting solutions from that, you know. And it's it blows my mind, regularly blows my mind. I know that we are teetering on the brink, but at the same time, You know, you just, if you think about that in terms of a person, very often people won't do anything to change until it feels like the death knell sort of thing. Like people very often have to get to that point and have a real scare actually before they make change. And I think we're just at that point now collectively. Agreed. And I think that that's what conjures courage, and that's what conjures innovation and solution. It's going to feel like it fell from the sky, and I guess in some ways it will have, but that's where it's going to come from. And so we can all be cultivating that within ourselves before we get to the brink.
Absolutely.
Like we're there collectively. Yeah. So
we have, those there's generations of kids with Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune all conjunct in Capricorn, in born in like around 1990, that are, I get a lot of them in my practice, and I'm like, okay, you know, I think they're and beyond, you know, the star seeds that are within all of us, the seeds that are within the generations and within this time contain, you know, the directions for navigating it.
And oh, absolutely. I've got
it's
it.
Like, we
I've
can do it. This. We can do this. And if you don't want to suffer over your suffering, you know, then listen, belong to a group where you can open your mind and learn more so that you can know more about yourself, and that you can heed the calls that are coming about your own unique contribution. Move that initiatory point. Go to Carrie's intuition class, you know, learn about astrology and understand that, like, we can all do something here, but also, you know, keep the faith, you know, because I think that this, that messages, you know, messages are contained within the chart of the equinox, you know, and that it's important that we understand that everyone, that they're available for everyone. There's information, you know? So I have to thank you so much for doing this talk. I think that we've done about an hour and 20 minutes or something like that.
Not sure. I always forget time when we get into these conversations.
We've been in there, but how can people find you and be able to, like, sign up for your courses and your classes?
Probably the easiest way is through my socials, although they may not come up in your feed, but I write very regularly on my socials, which is Boho Mofo. I've got a newsletter for people who don't do socials. I've sort of really only just returned to that. It's a brand new discipline that I'm trying to cultivate in myself. On my link tree that's connected to my Instagram, it's all of the links to, you know, courses, classes, and I've got a website and all that sort of stuff. But everything's under bohomofo.com, except for my book. I published my book under my own name. but everything else is underneath that. The class is, the intuition class is this Sunday morning Australian time, which, and I've timed it because we've got a daylight saving change coming up. So I've timed it so that people from the Northern Hemisphere will be able to join as well. It will feel like Saturday for you guys. And yeah, it's really well priced so that people can join. I offer payment plans. I offer all that sort of stuff as well, because it's just about making it accessible while still making a living. So, and then the coven's even easier and less of a financial commitment. It's only $10 a month, and you get a ton of content that will connect you to the moon cycles and the cycles of the earth, because I think they are becoming more important now than ever. We need to stay anchored to something through this chaos, and for me it has been the moon and stars for a very, very long time. So, you know, it's an anchor point. But the whole purpose of the coven was really to give people a vehicle to explore their own spirituality, and so you can dip in and out of it as much as you want. You can be as vocal, or you can be like a lot of people are when it comes to witchy stuff. You can just sit on the outside of the fire circle and just occasionally chuck in things every now and then. And all of my all of my coven witches get, I call them witches mates, right, to all of the events and circles that I do. I mean, I have just started doing in-person circles again in the place where I live in Australia. And oh my God, that is delightful to just be really sitting around an altar and with people again. I'm doing a full moon circle next week and I can't wait. I was going to do a big equinox fire circle, which was going to be my big first one, you know, with all that beautiful Aries energy. And then it was like 100 degrees and a total fire ban. And I was like, okay,
a lot of fire energy.
Fire this time. We'll save it for the winter solstice. But yeah, so there's, that's what I'm really keen at the moment, to just be connecting again after so many years of feeling really disconnected. You know, I was always connected to people online, but it's it's that conversation, that real-time connection rather than just the reading. So yeah, very keen.
Yeah, that's going to be exciting.
Ooh, well,
I can't wait to visit you. I'm going to put that on my list.
Oh yes, please. Oh my goodness, that would be fantastic.
That would be amazing. And vice versa, coming out here, you know.
Definitely. I mean, the UK is the place that's biggest on my radar at the moment. I was there last year. I'm going to be there again later in the year, and fingers crossed, running a retreat. I certainly see my future in the northern hemisphere more than the southern at the moment. So yeah, I'm making the most of my time here because I do feel like it will be drawing to a close and I will be flying north. I can't wait. It'll make me so much closer to you.
Yeah, I know. I was just in England last summer as well, and we definitely want to go back. Always want to go back. That's for another conversation. We'll talk about ley lines and energetic places and
astrocartography
and where you should live on the island. And,
I had the biggest ley line experience last year. It was still digesting it.
I bet. Well, thank you again. And I think that
we
connected and brought up so many just really amazing points about this time and you know, opportunities. And as always, I love connecting with you. I appreciate you. I honor you. And I'm really looking forward to, we should talk about doing something together.
Absolutely.
From a ritual standpoint in
absolutely
the near future.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. And thank you so much for this kind invitation, wonderful conversation. I every time we connect, I feel like we could just for hours and hours and hours.
Yes, it's never ending, and we have to probably put some boundary on it. But I love your beautiful words. Thank you so much for them. They always are so just powerful to me. I want to leave everyone with some more of Carrie's words. Perfectly Aquarian.
Oh, thank you.
We know one bad egg can ruin our day, but fail to imagine how our collective chorus could change the game altogether. Beyond outside allegiances that never repay borrowed will, there is still not more capable of change than individuals who commit their hearts and minds to a cause or calling. If that's not so perfectly Aquarian, I don't know what is.
Well, here's to all of our callings. Individually and together.
Yes. Thank you again.
Thank you, lovely.
And kisses and love across the thousands
across of the miles, seas.
Across the seas. Yes. And we will talk again soon.
Definitely. Take care.
Bye-bye.